Welcome to Our Cover Crops for You, a podcast put on by the Midwest Cover Crops Council. I'm your host, Anna Morrow, and this is a series of short interviews with farmers and specialists about solving problems on the farm and how cover crops can be a part of the solution. Today I'm interviewing Naeem Kalwar, who is an Extension Soil Health Specialist at the Langdon Research and Extension Center in North Dakota. In this episode, Naeem will discuss some of the challenges he sees in North Dakota to adopt cover crops, as well as the role of cover crops to help improve the salinity and sodicity problems in some of the soils he sees.
So my name is Naeem Kalwar, and I work as soil health specialist out of Langdon Research Extension Center with NDSU. I'm kind of in the northeast corner of the state. We are very wet. We have been wet. 2017 was dry. The main challenge I see to cover crops, people want to plant cover crops, but there is a short growing season. So the way I see it, interseeding would be a big thing, because if they don't interseed, there's not a lot of time left for them to get good growth, and that disappoints farmers. Last year I saw one case where one person planted a mix roughly the same when his soybeans got hailed in the first week of August, and his growth was phenomenal, cover crop growth. The other one planted after harvesting wheat in the first week of roughly September, and the growth was 4 or 5 inches. He ended up tilling it, you know, so he was so disappointed. That's one challenge. The other challenge, people want to plant their crops timely in the spring. So we are conventionally tilled area. Western part of the state is different. There are lots of no-tillers around Fargo, but in the northeast corner, you could count the no-tillers like on your fingertips. The challenge is that if you want to go no-till, you will start seeing the benefits after 3-4 years. People don't have the patience. They have a wet spring, and then they panic, and then they go back to whatever they have been doing. To me, people want to plant cover crops, but they are not sure what's going to happen to the residue. First of all, how will be the growth, whether their investment will pay off or no. Second thing, the one guy who had phenomenal growth, he was so worried later instead of being happy, because he said, I don't know whether the residue will rot or no, so I would not be able to plant my crop in the spring on time. He ended up cutting that and doing some tillage, even though he could have left it, you know. So these are the two main challenges: short growing season and spring planting. And it would require some producers who have some patience to wait for at least 3-4 years to start seeing the benefits. But it's coming along. We are way behind than the western part of the state as well as the southern part of the state in the northeast corner. But last year, I believe, was a breakthrough, at least around Langdon or in Cavalier County. Cover crops will for sure would be beneficial. We have huge issue of topsoil blowing away, and it's not just a spring, it's fall too. This winter, we call it snert here. There's a lot of black soil, you know, in the ditches, and I've seen marked differences where there was at least some previous residue. It was just white snow, and wherever it was tilled, the ditch was black.
So what are some other short-term benefits from cover crops, or maybe some challenges on the farm that cover crops can help farmers meet those challenges?
So one challenge I see, another challenge, is we have lots of salinity and sodicity issues here. Often, most of the annual cover crop species are not really salt-tolerant. Oats are salt-tolerant, barley is salt-tolerant, and beets are salt-tolerant. So those could be good annual mixes, but the areas which are already high for salt require a perennial mix. So in my view, perennial options should also be part of cover crops, because the way I see cover crops, they cover the soil. And if you do not have a mix or a species which would do well at a certain soil EC or salt level, you have to go to a perennial mix. Those areas got to this point, you know, not just in 1 year. It took a while. It will also take a while to lower the salt levels in those areas. So I think perennial, a salt-tolerant perennial mix would be the win-win on those areas.
Do you have any stories or examples of changes that you've seen in these sodic and saline soils of how cover crops, annual or perennial, have really helped meet that challenge? Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so at the NDSU Langdon Research Extension Center, we have these areas which have not been producing anything since the last 10, 15 years. But every year, like any other farm, our technicians would just plant over regular crops, over them, these areas. And so we were spending money on, you know, fertilizer, seed, and the fuel and lubrication. And essentially, there was nothing germinating or very poor stands. So in 2014, we planted a salt-tolerant grass mix there. And you know, there are different spots. They are not like one big chunk, but there was a 15-acre field which we planted with this salt-tolerant grass mix, which was a mix of five grasses, tall wheat grass, slender wheat grass, intermediate wheat grass, AC saltlander, which is a green wheat grass, and Russian wild rye. In 2015, we hit those 15 acres, and they yielded about 3,000 pounds of biomass per acre, because there were two hay bales per acre. And each hay bale, I asked the guy who hid them, roughly about 1,500 pounds. So 3,000 pounds of biomass. So the way I look at it, we were not losing any money on fertilizer and seed on areas which basically were doomed, because I heard from technicians that these areas are not going to produce anything. They knew about it, but it's difficult to shut off your, you know, air seeder, you know, planter when you're going over these areas. So we were not losing any money. We actually made some money in terms of hay bales. And on top of it, that's improving soil organic matter, reducing evaporation. That means less salts are coming towards the top soil. So we are actually improving those areas. So to me, that was a big thing, which we actually did right at the center. And when we do it at the center, farmers are also watching us.
So have farmers adopted some of those practices?
Farmers are doing this. So last year was very dry. So the headlands, which already had high salt levels, but last year they were very prominent. Almost where spots where you would normally see a little bit of germination, last year we didn't see any germination at all. So now a lot of farmers are talking about putting these strips of these salt-tolerant grasses along the headlands or along the infield ditches or the lower spots to establish a vegetative cover. And then they can plant their regular crops around those areas. So there is a big talk. And I would say this one thing. Farmers are also really worried about the soil erosion, the blowing of topsoil. It's not like they don't observe. But they, coming back to the original point, they want to plant timely in a spring. So the area I work in, they basically want to till to increase soil temperatures for soils to warm up quickly in the spring. So they go and chisel plow in the fall. They again cultivate mostly in the spring. And that's their fear, that otherwise it's not going to warm up for them to plant. So I think faba beans is one crop which could also benefit them, because it's kind of like blackish. It'll warm up the soil quicker.
So have you experienced cooler soils without tillage?
The studies need to be conducted. There is a tillage study going on out of main campus Fargo. Dr. Aaron Day is doing it. And he basically showed us there's not a huge difference between chisel plowing and strip till. You know, roughly the soil temps were roughly in the same range. So more studies need to be done, especially in the Northeast. But I think that study would be a key, because there is a myth out there. And it is true, when you open up the soil, moisture evaporates. So in short term, the surface moisture will evaporate, but there's more capillary water which is coming from down below the surface. So, but we don't see that. We only see that the top has, you know, the moisture, excessive moisture has evaporated. So that's why they are focusing. But that's making our soils actually more saline too, you know. So planting is a crucial thing. That's their livelihood, you know. But I personally see a big, huge role of cover crops there. It's just that we have to make sure that if a cover crop mix is ideal for a land which doesn't have any salt issues, for example, we can plant that there, but we should not try the same mix where there are high salt levels. We have to tweak the mix.
Sure. Yep. Anything else you want to add?
I would again emphasize that we should make the perennial species part of the cover crop, because, and I think in one of the group discussions, the objective came out that one farmer said that salinity is the issue. And if you look at the salt tolerance of all, most of the major annual cover crop species, I would just take barley, oats. In my personal experience, I found oats as salt tolerant as barley.
Okay.
And then beets. They are very good in terms of their salt tolerance. Otherwise, the other crops are very good at making these deep channels in the soil, you know, bringing the nitrogen close to the surface, using up excess water, providing biomass, but they don't survive at high salt levels. So as long as we have options for everybody, I think that would be a win-win.
Thanks, Naeem.
You're welcome.
Thanks for joining me on our Cover Crops for You with the Midwest Cover Crops Council. I just had the chance to interview Naeem Kalwar of the Langdon Research Extension Center in North Dakota. And we had a great conversation about how cover crops can help reduce the impacts of saline soils. Join me for the next episode where I talk with Aaron Hiramoto from the University of Kentucky about the role of cover crops in helping to manage herbicide-resistant mare's tail populations.